We'll get to some NFL power rankings coming up. Not easy to do right now, that's for sure. It never is really early in the season. But I wanted to play something for all of you. I have a feeling a lot of you have already seen this because many of you sent it to me on Twitter and wanted comments on it. And so we'll do that right here. So what I'm talking about is an appearance that Mike Silver made on a Barstool Pardon My Take podcast. Mike Silver, remember, is a longtime NFL insider, Sports Illustrated, NFL Network, and then in 2021 came to work for the then Washington football team. Remember, they hired him to be essentially a contributor to their website, and he was doing the preseason games, the sideline reporting. He was a longtime friend of Ron Rivera. They both went to Cal Berkeley, they brought him on. I remember saying to him at one point, I'm like, you really want to come to work for this organization? He's like, oh, yeah, things are changing. The opportunities. We'll see. Well, they ultimately did change. That was a quick one-year thing, and he's back to doing reporting work for the San Francisco Chronicle out in the Bay Area. So he was on this podcast yesterday, and Mike's been a friend of Mike Shanahan's over the years. And he started to talk about the Washington 2012 season and the dysfunction associated with RG3, Mike, Dan, Cousins, etc. Now, most of this is not revealing it all to us. We know the story of the Cleveland game and the press conference that Robert held and, Dan running through the locker room and trampling Kirk to get to RG3 to give him a big hug and say, you're still my guy and all of that. You'll hear him talk about that stuff. But there was a big revelation, something I did not know. And we've gone through this story many, many times, and I've talked to Mike many, many times on the air and off the air. I'm talking about Mike Shanahan, not Mike Silver. I mean, we had the first, real interview with Shanahan after his coaching career here that was a bit of a bombshell, the stuff that he dropped on everybody about what went on in 2012 and 2013. So some of this stuff you're going to hear to begin with is stuff you know. Then you're going to hear something you did not know. This was Mike Silver, I guess, yesterday on a Pardon My Take Barstool podcast.
RG3 gets hurt, and now Kirk Cousins, who they'd also drafted that year, has got to play in Cleveland, and they run a more traditional Shanahan offense game plan with a lot of boots, the fake handoff and the rollout, and Kirk Cousins goes wild in that game, and they win. So now, here's the post-game scene. Dan Snyder barrels through the locker room, goes right past Kirk Cousins, who is having this glorious moment, almost steps on him, to get to Robert Griffin and say, hey, don't worry, it's okay, you're still my guy. And Kirk is just standing there. It's right. Super mm-hmm. awkward. While this is happening, RG2, Robert's father, yeah. who was very involved, has managed to somehow get in the locker room, and he's all over Mike Shanahan. Man, why didn't you call any running plays? Yeah. And Mike's like, he can run on those boots. He just chose to throw. We want to run those plays with Robert. And Robert comes back too early, probably, because yeah. he's threatened by that.
All in for year two. I remember that.
Yeah. That playoff game where he ends up tearing up the knee and that's the beginning of the end was horrible. But in most people's minds, well, he'll get surgery and they'll come back and they'll build on this and it'll be amazing. At the end of that season, Mike Shanahan ends up recommending to Dan Snyder, Bruce Allen, the GM, and the other owners, we should trade Robert now. We know he's not really what people think he is. The league's going to catch up and it's not going to work out the way you think. His value is amazing. We might get back the three ones we gave up and we can play with Kirk. And Mike Shanahan has it all figured out. He's like, this is the best idea ever. And it did not go over well.
So that was obviously some news to a lot of us. We knew with the Cleveland game. I mean, it's still remarkable, right, just to think how dysfunctional not only the ownership was going into the locker room. Remember, the part of the Cleveland game story he doesn't tell is prior to the game, you know, Mike told this story on the air with us. Prior to the game, Dan's down on the field with RG3 walking over to Mike saying, Robert's okay. He's going to play today. And Mike said, no, he isn't. The doctor didn't clear him, and he hasn't practiced all week. And that just absolutely infuriated Dan and Robert. And Robert ended up holding, remember, his own press conference after a game in which he did not play. The Cleveland game was really the first sign, like, uh-oh, what the hell is going on here? The father and, you know, some of the close family members were allowed the access that other players didn't have. It was a total S show behind the scenes. But just the idea that they had gone out and pummeled Cleveland 38-21 to stay alive in the playoff race, and the owner is pissed off, and the starting quarterback and his father are making a scene in the locker room. It's just, I mean, and to think that that's probably barely even top 10 on the dysfunctional list during the Snyder era. But man, Mike went to Dan and to Bruce after the season and said, let's trade him. So I reached out to Mike after I saw this yesterday, and I said, is this true? He said, it is. It is true. And I said, you know, of all the years, Mike's been on with me probably a dozen times over the years, not in recent years. And the reason, by the way, is he's very involved, you know, from afar, but not that far in the 49ers. I mean, some people kind of refer to Mike as like the second GM there. I mean, he watches tape. He, you know, does write-ups. He gives Kyle a lot of, you know, his thoughts. And because he's kind of involved there, he's really stopped doing a lot of media over the last year, year and a half in particular. But anyway, I said, you know, I can't even believe it's out there. I'm sure I mentioned it to Mike just in passing, but it's true. Now, they would never have done this, okay? Dan was never going to do that. Obviously, they looked at Mike like he had four eyes and said, are you out of your mind? He just had one of the great seasons in the history of the National Football League for a rookie. Won the, you know, Rookie Offensive Player of the Year award. Look, in hindsight, or even in foresight, Mike would have been right to do it. Think about getting the picks back, having Kirk. You know, Mike would have coached. Kyle would have coached after that. We'd still be in the era of probably the Shanahan coaches and, you know, maybe, I don't know, probably Cousins for whatever it's worth. But that wouldn't have worked either because Dan would have screwed that up somehow. But here's why there's no chance this would have ever been entertained. Even though it may have been the right football move in the moment, even though they knew a lot more than we knew or the league knew about RG3, the quarterback, RG3, the person in terms of coachability, etc., can you imagine the S-storm in this town? They traded RG3 coming off ACL, LCL surgery, and the Offensive Rookie of the Year, and the savior of the franchise for draft choices. This is a conversation that would have been so much more than a sports or a football conversation. It would have been, you know, tinged, more than tinged. It would have been so racial in that moment in time. There's no chance that this would have ever happened. And, you know, in part because Dan loved Robert. I mean, you know, the you-know-what sniffer that he was just so disgusting and so grossly immature. Just, you know, a loser, really, you know, when it came to those things. He was never going to part with his new best friend. who he, you know, thought was the savior of him and this franchise. But just the storm it would have created wouldn't have been probably worth the squeeze in the moment. Down the road it would have been, but it just would have been received very poorly by the masses. And it would have really divided. It would have been racially divisive. And I'm not even suggesting it would have been a racial conversation. Because remember what had happened with Mike with Donovan McNabb, you know, in 2010 towards the end of the season when he talked about conditioning and, you know, reading defenses and all that, even though it probably was true in that moment. So that would not have gone over very well with almost anybody in the moment, in part because we didn't know. You know, we had a clue with the Cleveland game. That was a bit jarring. But remember, that's only a couple of weeks after one of the all-time great games, you know, for RG3 and for really the franchise during that era. And that's the Thanksgiving Day win in Dallas. I mean, that was as feel-good as it gets. That was only a couple of weeks earlier. The week before, obviously, this Cleveland game is the Holodinata hit. Crazy. He went to Bruce and Dan and said, I got an idea. Let's trade him. His value is still really high. The rest of the league doesn't know what we know, and that is it's not going to work out very well. Woo! Oh, the dysfunction. We survived it, though, and we got ourselves a real quarterback and hopefully a real owner now. All right, when we come back, we'll do NFL Power Rankings. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. We are free and live on the Odyssey app.
Rank 'em 1 to 5. I've got the power! NFL Power Rankings.
All right, Denton. I mean, we could just essentially go with the five undefeated teams as top five. I mean, that's what we have left after 3 weeks, just five undefeated teams. Buffalo, Pittsburgh, Kansas City, Minnesota, and Seattle. But are Minnesota and Seattle top five teams? I have a feeling you might think they are. I will wait on that for a moment. I'm going to go 1 to 5, all right, because I do think there's a debate this week on number one. But I'm going to leave the Chiefs at number one and put the Bills at number two. Buffalo's been incredibly impressive, but who have they beaten? The Cardinals, the Dolphins, and the Jags. You know, I want to see what they do Sunday night against the Ravens. I want to see what they do in a few weeks. They have three straight road games, Buffalo, Houston, and the Jets. You know, I want to see what they look like in November when they go back-to-back Chiefs and 49ers. I want to see what they look like when they play the Lions and the Jets almost, you know, in 2 out of 3 weeks late in the season. I mean, there are tougher weekends coming for the Buffalo Bills. I do like what I've seen from them, and it certainly sounds like Josh Allen prefers kind of distributing the ball to a bunch of different guys than having one guy, that one guy would be Stephon Diggs, screaming that he needs to get the ball. I think he completed passes against the Jags, a game we didn't even talk about, to 10 different receivers in the game. There were 10 different receivers who caught at least one ball in the game. But until they play somebody, I can't make them number two. I keep KC at number two. At number three, I know that they lost another game and they are 1-2. And maybe for the first time in the history of the power rankings, I'm going to have a 1-2 team in the top three. But I still think fully healthy, and they're not. The 49ers are in the conversation as the best team in the league. So I am putting the 49ers at three. I'm not going to shy away from this week. They may be the best defensive team in the league. They have a playmaking quarterback. They have an excellent coach. I know that, you know, the 9-8 records under Mike Tomlin have looked ugly in recent years. I think there's something different about the Steelers. I think Pickens is legit upper tier as a receiver. I'm putting Pittsburgh into my top five at number four. I could easily be proven wrong on Sunday because I'll tell you what, I think the Colts may be the right play based on the point spread. But I really think there's something different about the Steelers this year, not because they're 3-0, but because they're so dominant, so disruptive defensively, and they're much more capable offensively. And then number five, even though they just got their first win of the year, I've got another 1-2 team in my top five, the Baltimore Ravens. I'm not ready to put Minnesota or Seattle ahead of the Ravens. I put Pittsburgh ahead of the Ravens. I understand that. But I'm keeping the Ravens and 49ers in my top five, even though they have losing records. The Ravens looked awesome against the Cowboys. They are going to be just an absolute... I didn't feel this way last week. I thought this was the key game, the Dallas game. And they went in and they bludgeoned Dallas with, you know, what they are. And that is a physical, you know, a mean-spirited at times team when they're backed into a corner. I love that about the Ravens. Who the hell is going to stop Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson on any given day? Certainly not Dallas. So I've got Baltimore at top five, at number five. It's a tough top five to put together. I acknowledge that. I think the top two, put them in any order you want, are kind of obvious after 3 weeks. But I'll let you give me yours now.
Give me your number one team again. Was it Kansas City or Buffalo?
I went with KC still at number one.
So you went
Buffalo
KC
has not played anybody. And KC, let's face it, they beat Baltimore, they beat Cincinnati, whatever Cincinnati is, and I think they beat a decent Atlanta team on the road on Sunday night. Buffalo's beaten nobody.
All right, so ours look way different. So I do have Buffalo at number one, and it's the reason that you said or one of the points that you made about them in that game that we did not talk about because our team played on Monday night, but the way that Josh Allen is distributing the ball, that when I watch him is kind of him unlocking the next level. Obviously, having a guy like Stephon Diggs on the team would be wonderful. I still questioned who is going to be their number one guy. Like, we need a big catch. Who's it going to go to? But the fact that they're distributing the ball the way that they are, I think that's the next step in Josh Allen's evolution. And one of the reasons why, at least in the very early and very, very early portion of the season, he's looking like the front runner for the MVP. So I have the Bills just slightly ahead of Kansas City as my number one, with Kansas City being number two. Here's where things get wonky, Kevin, and we get a little wild. I have the Jets at number three. I think we're starting to see Aaron Rodgers get back into Aaron Rodgers mode. We remember, like, that week one performance, which wasn't great but wasn't bad. That was the first time he played football in about 365 days.
And looked good throwing the football. They just didn't have the football that much.
They didn't have the football that much. So I like what I've seen from them in the ensuing weeks. They just need to get more of Garrett Wilson involved. Because you love him. I love him. Garrett Wilson is a really good wide receiver in this league. Getting him more involved. But as the defense gets more comfortable, like, there are some things on this Jets roster that I really, really like. And then the two-headed monster, Breece Hall and Braylon Allen, that could be very, very damning for teams in the AFC. On top of that, it looks like, you know, there's going to be two teams in their conference with the Patriots and Dolphins that are not very good, which means it will just be them and the Bills kind of jockeying for a position in the AFC East, which could be really fun. But I have right now the Jets at number three, and I'm going to do it. I got Minnesota at number four, but it has nothing to do with their offense. You know, Sam Darnold has played very, very well. There's no denying that. Justin Jefferson has played very, very well. There's no denying that. He's the best wide receiver in football. But damn, Brian Flores got a defense, man. I mean, they're allowing 10 points per game, and they held Houston, a really, really good offense with a ton of weapons, to 7 points. They made CJ Stroud look pedestrian. After he big brothered Caleb Williams, they made him look like Sam Darnold's little brother. The way that defense is flying around, like, a lot of attention being paid to Pittsburgh, and they should, because Pittsburgh has, you know, obviously TJ Watt, and they got a bunch of, I would say, more household names on defense, although not a ton. But I think Minnesota, the way that they play defensively mixed with what they've done on offense has been incredibly impressive. But I do have Pittsburgh rounding out my top five. So I don't have any San Francisco. I don't have any Baltimore in here. I liked what Baltimore did against Dallas, but the end of that game made me a little nervous, maybe scratch my head a little bit, because traditionally I don't feel like Baltimore is a team that when they get up 28 to whatever is going to let the other team get back in the game, and they did. So that made me a little nervous, which is why I have them on the outside looking in. But I got Minnesota at 4 and Pittsburgh at 5 to round out my top 5.
Do you know how many yards the Chargers had in the second half against Pittsburgh? Minus 5.
That's insane.
Something I read, I think it was last night or early this morning, about Minnesota. It's really interesting. And I had them very close. I had the Jets also close, and I had Detroit still close to my top five. I did not consider Washington for my top five. I considered them, but we got to see a little bit more. But Kevin O'Connell, who is the head coach and really the offensive guru and play caller, Brian Flores mentioned that some of the blitzes that they're using, Kevin O'Connell's actually designed. He's like, they have a really good relationship, and Kevin will text me every once in a while and say, hey, what do you think about this kind of this blitz? And Brian's like, love it. We're putting it into the game plan this week. That's a really good coaching situation to have, because there are a lot of NFL teams that have essentially divided house. I'm not saying in terms of, you know, conflict, but, you know, defensive guys are over here, offensive guys are over here. Hey, we'll see on Sunday, basically. We'll see at practice. And even coaches. I mean, Joe Gibbs and Richie Pettibone during, you know, the glory years. Joe handled the offense. Richie handled the defense. I mean, they didn't, you know, Richie didn't go to Joe asking for ideas and vice versa. They just trusted in each other. But these guys communicate, and Kevin O'Connell, you know, Cooley once told me, Sean McVay said this too, but Cooley told me that the best offensive minds in football coached defense at some point. And he had always recommended to anybody in coaching that if you want to be an offensive coordinator, you know, you want to be a play caller, you've got to coach a couple of years on defense. That's the best way to become the best offensive mind. I don't know that Kevin O'Connell's ever been a defensive coach. I don't think he has. But I think Sean McVay said the same thing at one point. McVay's had a lot of different, you know, coaching jobs, and before he finally, you know, got a break here in terms of a real position coach. But how about that? I mean, they are rolling defensively. We know that defense has more variance year to year. It even has variance within a year. And you don't have a league anymore, really, where just a dominant defense with a subpar offense can win the Super Bowl. It can get to the postseason. It can maybe win a game. But Minnesota and Pittsburgh have dominant defenses here through the first 3 weeks. And they've got offenses that are, in Pittsburgh, much improved. In Minnesota, they've picked up where they left off when you know who got hurt last year, because they were rolling at that point. But you know who else is very good defensively? Seattle's played very well defensively so far. There are a couple of really good defensive teams early in the season, but Minnesota, Pittsburgh, maybe the Chargers have been the most impressive. I'm pulling up DVOA rankings.
Well, you want to talk about playing nobody, though. Seattle has played nobody.
True. DVOA. Minnesota 1, Seattle 2, Chargers 3, Pittsburgh 4, New Orleans 5. You don't really have to spend much time to think of who 32 is. You know, one of the things that I didn't mention yesterday when talking about Washington's historically awful defensive start is not only are they the number 32 ranked defense out of 32 teams per the DVOA metric at this point, it's not even close. There are 13 percentage points between them and the Rams, who are 31. What is that? That is such a massive statistical difference. Usually the difference between, you know, say 23rd and 22nd, or 9th and 8th, or 32nd and 31 is like a couple of percentage points, but usually it's like less than 1%. There's 13% difference between the worst defense in the NFL, Washington, and the 31st ranked defense in the league. It's bad. It's got to improve, or they're going to, you know, people say, well, why wouldn't, if Jaden was so good, why weren't they in the playoff? Well, because they had a terrible defense. It's actually remarkable that they won the games that they won against some of the teams that they beat with the defense that they had. And here he is as a rookie in the NFL with, once again, an absolute train wreck of a defense through three games. He's going to have to carry this team. A lot to put on a rookie quarterback when you are not getting any short field opportunities. They got one courtesy of the Eckler kickoff return. And you basically need to score on every single drive. The last two games, as we know, they haven't punted. And you could make the case that if they punted once in each game, they would have lost both of those games. That's not a good position to be in. If they had punted once in the Giant game, they probably would have lost the game. If they had punted once on Monday night, they probably would have lost the game. That's crazy town. I mean, punting once in an NFL game with no turnovers should be an absolute guaranteed W. And if they had punted once against the Giants and punted once against Cincinnati, they'd be 0-3. They literally had to score every single time they had the ball, and they did for two straight games. Will it happen on Sunday? Will it need to happen? Arizona's pretty explosive offensively. How many times are they going to get stopped? This is where takeaways become so crucial. By the way, penalties become really big also. You've got to figure out a way, if you can't do it yourself, that the refs help you out or that the other team self-destructs. We've had one turnover, one takeaway in three games. It was a legitimate takeaway, too. It was forced. It was the Benjamin St. Juice punch out. We needed that and no punts to win the game. They're going to have to, and I say they're going to have to because I'm assuming that it isn't going to dramatically improve because of the personnel. That maybe there's some improvement coming, but it's not going to be dramatic improvement, which means they need takeaways somehow. They need the other offense to self-destruct. Kyler Murray and Arizona are capable, we've seen it in the last couple of years, of really playing a bad game and playing a dumb game. But they haven't so far this year. They've looked pretty in sync offensively. All right, when we come back, Denton will have a college football weekend preview. We've got the biggest game of the year Saturday night in Tuscaloosa. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app.
Pick up your book bags. Grab your notebooks. It's time to go on campus with Denton.
Hey, give me my theme music.
All right. College football week 5. Amazing that we are here already. And we've got the biggest game of the year. Although there could be a couple of others coming down the road, including Georgia, Texas. But we get Georgia-Bama in the regular season Saturday night. Where do you want to start? I would assume it's there.
Oh, damn. I thought you were going to say the biggest game of the year was BYU and Baylor. No, yeah, we're going to talk.
It's a big game. It's
not really. Considering that you got Georgia and Bama. And this is like one of the first time in years that Alabama is an underdog at home. They're 2-point dogs to Georgia. The dogs on the road. It's in Tuscaloosa. It's 7:30. They promoted the hell out of it last week again on the Tennessee-Oklahoma game. I don't blame them, but I was like, good Lord, every commercial break it was like, hey, by the way, Georgia-Alabama next week. This is, though, one of those games that I don't really know how to feel, Kevin, because based off of like how we normally do this, you get a game beforehand. Well, both these two teams took a week off. So right. I don't know if that's a good thing, if that's a bad thing. The last time that we saw Georgia on the field, they were just barely sneaking past a Kentucky team that is okay, not great, but okay. and they struggled mightily against them. So generally, like, that rebound spot, I feel like, is the week after. Well, they didn't have that, the traditional rebound spot that next week. So I don't know what to anticipate from Georgia. Alabama looked way better in their last game that we saw them, but in a similar position for them. That, I think, adds a little bit of an excitement to this game. That, not that it needed a little bit of excitement, but it is just that added cherry on top.
I have no idea what to expect from this game. I don't like it from a betting standpoint either way. I'm not surprised Georgia's, you know, a slight favorite. I mean, this is Kalen DeBoer's first big spot at Bama. I know that Georgia's good defensively. It's the only thing I think I know about this game. And not just good, but they can be dominant defensively. And that may be ultimately the difference here. Because, I mean, I know week one is week one, but Clemson scored 3 points against Georgia and since then has scored 66 and 59 and put up over 500 yards in two straight games. By the way, they've turned, you know, the Clemson story is an interesting story here early in the year, but Georgia's great on defense. I know that. But you and I both feel the same way about Carson Beck. We're not believers yet. Can they run the ball with Travis Etienne, you know, down Alabama's throats on the road? I don't know. Like, what's the total in this game?
The total's 48.5, which is a little bit of a bigger number than I expected it to
yeah.
be. I thought it was going to be in the neighborhood of like 45.5, 46.5. So 48.5 is longer than I thought. As you mentioned, like, I'm not a massive Carson Beck guy. I think his tattoos are cool. But outside of that, like, I'm not a massive Carson Beck guy. I think Georgia's defense is really good, Kevin. The problem is, you know, I still don't love Clemson's offense. I think Clemson now has become a team that needs to get beat up before they can be good. That's just kind of like their role now is, you know, I'm not shaming anybody. Like what you like. But if you need to get beat up to have some success, that's what you are. But the other games, like, I mean, Tennessee Tech, you're not going to score anything against Georgia. And then they allowed, I guess, 12 to Kentucky. But I don't know that they're as dominant as they have been just from a top-to-bottom roster that we are used to them being in the past 4 or 5 years. So I think there is a chance that Alabama at home could do it. The thing is, do you trust Jalen Milroe? Like, I don't love Carson Beck. Do you trust Jalen Milroe? That's the question.
No, this is where I was going next. In these games over the years, you've got to lean on the better quarterback when you're trying to pick the game or trying to, you know, bet the game. And it's a really close call here. Like, I don't feel like either one of them is going to be exceptional and carry the game. So it's going to come down to, you know, like, I that's the way I feel about it. Like, there are times where we've had these games and it's like, I'll just side with the best quarterback in the game, period. I'm going with Bryce Young in this game, you know, and I'll take Bama. And I don't feel strongly enough about either quarterback, which means this is a game that'll come down to, you know, the team that doesn't make the mistakes. You know, the team that flinches and turns it over or, you know, puts one up for grabs, the quarterback that puts one up for grabs, that could be the difference in a, you know, in a 21-14 kind of a game. I think I would, if you forced me to bet the game, I would probably bet Georgia. But I that's based on them not being super impressive the last time we saw it, and because of that, there's probably a little bit more of the public thinking Bama at home. But it's not an overwhelming number. By the way, I'm just looking at it. That line's up to 2.5 now.
I'm interested to see where the gambling public is going to fall on this one.
Bama, slightly.
Bama, slightly.
Not big, but slightly.
Because my early lean, I think, is to Bama. I think Carson Beck is a better thrower of the football than Jalen Milroe, but I think Jalen Milroe has that it factor to where he steps up in big games.
Yeah, I said that George is up to 2.5. It did come down to 2, but at one point it was 3, 3.5. So, I don't know. I'm surprised at that total, too. You know, it almost makes me want to play contrarian over. because I think most people are expecting a low-scoring game. Can't wait for it.
No, it's going to be great.
Yeah, it'll be great. I mean, when's the last time Bama was a home underdog?
It's been years and years and years.
Decades, right?
It's been, I don't know I'm sure that they were a home underdog once or twice in the Saban era, but you probably have to go back to like that first year where they were, you know, a 500 middling team.
Here it is. They were a home underdog 2007 against LSU.
And that LSU team.
Saban LSU.
That LSU team won a championship.
Yeah. With Saban.
Yeah.
Right,
no, that was Les Miles, I believe.
Oh, that was Miles, right?
Yeah, Jacob Hester was on that team, a guy that we've had on our show. How about the game that's going up against? I mean, you know, 2 weeks ago we had that Georgia-Kentucky game where there was no actually good games in that late window. You going up against Illinois and Penn State, which I don't know for sure, but this might be the whiteout for Penn State. Illinois ranked 19th, Penn State ranked number 9.
Nah, how would this game can't be the whiteout game? Do they not play Ohio State at home or Michigan at home?
They do play Ohio State at home. The problem is that's probably going to be a big noon game.
Oh.
Because they want the ratings for it. Yeah, the television ratings craze has really, you know, ruined like the idea of whiteouts because they want that in that big noon slot.
I've been to 3 of them. I shouldn't say I've been to 3 of them. I've been to 3 tailgates for whiteout games. I've been to 2 of them, Ohio State, Michigan. Ohio State was Haskins and McLaurin that night. By the way, Noah Brown, I think, was a part of that game. Somebody else was, too. I'm forgetting who else. Was Curtis Samuel in that game?
He might have been in that game.
Penn State blew the lead in the second half. This would have been 2018. I'm pulling up the box score to see. Oh, so Paris Campbell.
Not That's the one right. they won on a blocked kick, right?
No. J.K. Dobbins, Paris Campbell. No, this isn't the game that I'm talking about. I think it is the game. I could have sworn that Terry McLaurin had a touchdown catch in this game. Maybe it was the year before. I don't know. We'll figure it out. I like Penn State against Illinois. They're giving a big number.
Big number. Big number.
A big number. And the public loves Illinois. And Drew Aller's played well so far. I mean, you and I thought it was a hideous freshman campaign. Look, they haven't played anybody. The team they just beat, Kent State, I was looking this up last night when I was trying to look at some games. They got paid big money to play Tennessee and Penn State on the road the last 2 weeks. 71-0, 56-0. I think that's 127-0. In their last 2 games. They also lost to Pitt in the opener, 55-24. The good news for them, they got paid, and it's a max schedule the rest of the way. But Penn State, you know, they came off that delay and they pummeled West Virginia. They beat a team that's actually not terrible because they almost beat Texas A&M last week.
The Another Bowling Green. Team.
Bowling Green, yeah. Thank you. But Allers look good.
They can
Singleton's
run.
Good. They're very good defensively. I think they pummel Brett Bielema in Illinois on Saturday night.
Yeah, I think they're going to run all over them. There are another ranked-on-ranked matchup. You got Louisville and Notre Dame. Notre Dame right now, big favorite. They get nearly a touchdown at home against Louisville. Obviously, they had that terrible game against Northern Illinois. I don't know that many people thought this would be a what would be considered a quality win for Notre Dame. I mean, beating an unbeaten 15th-ranked Louisville at home is definitely a quality win. So this is a big one for Notre Dame.
So Tim Murray, you guys remember Tim. He worked at the station many years. Tim now does a show for VSiN out in Vegas, lives in Vegas. And our good friend, Nick Ashew, who I love Nick. He does a great job with everything he does. But we have what we call between us the neighbor Nick theory. And he texted me a little while ago and he said, neighbor Nick said, how can Notre Dame be this big of a favorite? Riley Leonard stinks. So I think I'll have Notre Dame laying the big number against Nick. Louisville on the neighbor Nick theory. Here's the thing though. Riley Leonard just can't throw the football. So I'm assuming they're a big favorite because they're expecting Notre Dame to be able to run the football against Georgia Tech in a big way.
Or that Riley Leonard is going to run. I mean, because he can move a little bit. So they have that dual threat offense. Sneaky athlete, Riley Leonard.
I kind of like Notre Dame. Who do you like?
I think I like Notre Dame as well. Also, we got a big one on Friday. Kind of local.
Can Notre Dame survive the loss to Northern Illinois and make the playoff?
Yeah. Yeah, they can. Yeah, I mean, if they beat Louisville and if USC is still ranked by the time they play them, I mean,
Will they need USC to be good when they get to that game?
Yeah, they will. But if they're just a one-loss team and that one loss is to Northern Illinois, and then they start shellacking teams because they whooped Purdue. I mean, they laid – Purdue was punished for that Northern Illinois loss, and they had a pretty good offensive showing against Miami of Ohio. Real quickly here because we're running short on time, how about Miami-Virginia Tech on Friday? Big spot for Cam Ward.
Tech lost to Rutgers last week.
Yeah, I mean, I'm so off
what's
them.
The number? It's like 19 or 20?
17 and a half, so it might have moved a little bit. Big stage for Cam Ward, though.
Virginia Tech, this was not your best call preseason.
Big swing and a miss.
Yeah, I mean, we all do. Maryland's, let me just tell you, Maryland plays at Indiana at noon on Saturday. They're 7-point underdogs. This is a massive game for both teams. If Maryland's going to go have themselves a legitimate season, another 7-8 win season, they've got to beat Indiana. And Indiana has started off really well. They're very explosive offensively. Ty Felton, one of the best wide receivers in the country with Maryland, climbing draft boards all over. I've seen him now as a mocked second-round pick. He was nowhere near that 3 weeks ago. Go Terps. We're done for the day. Back tomorrow with a full Football Friday previewing and picking Washington at Arizona. Chris Russell's next.